Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
Hey, this is J. Michael Michael for LA Talk Radio, and if you're like me, you love talk radio. And if you like me, you love to listen to whatever they got on the radio, which is sports. It is. I forgot what I was saying, and that's okay, because it's. I guess we're starting now. So we'll do this again. Oh, well.
You're listening to The Writer's Block with Jim Christina, Bobby Bell, and Bob Brill, only on LA Talk Radio.
Peg it, Bob. What is it?
That is...
Same as last week.
I know. It's Paul Simon.
Angie.
Huh?
Angie. Paul Simon's Angie.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, the album?
From the Graceland album.
No.
No.
Wednesday morning, 3 a.m.
Oh, that's right. Yes, that's right. I take it back.
You buy him books, you send him to school.
Yeah.
Hey, it's LA Talk Radio, and you're listening to The Writer's Block.
I am your
host, Jim Christina, over-listening Bob Brill, who's sitting over here running his mouth. And what's up, Kate? We love Bob.
I've been music for a long time.
I know. You know, you're a big music guy. And, of course, we have on the phone with us our errant traveling reporter from Santa Clarita to Albuquerque to Santa Clarita to Albuquerque, Santa Clarita to Albuquerque, Bobby Jean Bell.
With a stop in Las Vegas in between.
Yes. Howdy, gentlemen. I'm happy to be here with you tonight.
Oh, we are so happy to have you with us. I'm glad you made it back safe.
Mm-hmm.
So I was listening to Jambalaya by Hank Williams on the way in.
Were you?
Yeah, down
you
up on
were?
YouTube. Yeah,
that's a great old song.
I love Hank Williams.
Yeah.
Hank
the original, Hank Williams, not his son, but his
yeah.
original
no, I like
Hank
them both.
Williams.
But I mean, I really like Hank Williams Sr. And for some reason, Jambalaya has been on my mind for freaking week.
Really?
That and the New Orleans song, Your Grandma and My Grandma, you know, Sitting by the Fire.
Oh, yeah.
Jack-o, my grandma, your grandma. Yeah. And both those songs, I mean, in the shower, you name it, they were just on my mind. And I said, I'm going to listen to Jambalaya on the way in just so I can remember the words. And I did.
You know what I find myself picking up on every now and then on YouTube, just because I just absolutely love the song, is Knights in White Satin.
Really?
Yeah.
That'll last.
And
a
then
ride.
I'll go to a guy. He's a Greek singer. His name is Mario
Woody
Frangoulis.
Blues.
Mario Frangoulis. And he does Knights in White Satin in Italian. And then right at the end, Justin Hayward comes in and sings with him. Oh, it gives you good. Well, I've got goosebumps right now.
You got goosebumps.
It's really good.
Goosebumps.
So the Cowboy Festival was good, right?
Outstanding, right, Bobby Jean?
It was.
Killer.
It was fun.
Yeah, I actually sold a record amount of books for me, you know, and like 2.5 times what I sold last year.
Well, I mean, this is your fourth year? Fifth year.
Fourth.
Fourth or third.
Fourth
Bobby
year.
I think that's my fourth.
No, I think fourth.
Yeah. And it was good. I mean, Lancer Hero of the West sold really well.
Good.
Had a lot of people buy all five books. And
you sold a stripper book.
I sold one of my Paddy Wagon books, Fan Letters to a Stripper.
Yeah.
And it was just really good. Actually, we sold out of one of the books. So I had my wife bring some more.
Yeah, there was a big spot in your wire rack where you knew there had to have been something.
You know, last year I sold out of Jonah Blue and I sold out of End of Line.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I don't know what it was this year. I mean, last year was hot. This year was just, the weather was perfect.
Yeah.
You know, and it was free again, so that helped. And I think the word finally got out that it was free and the parking's free. And when you say all that kind of free stuff, it means people can come and spend money on food and still have some money left over.
Right.
You know, and they actually spent money on books. And, Eric Heister told me he sold about 18 books, too. And his books sell for like three times what mine sell for.
He doesn't do a break on them either. No, he sells them full price.
Yeah, and so I think he said he sold 18. We went to dinner after on Sunday.
He's such a kick. I just love Eric.
Well, we did a lot of promoting. I really revved up even more promotion on Facebook, and we also were promoting a giveaway. Mm-hmm. All the authors were generous and donated titles, and it was very fun at the end at 4 o'clock on Sunday where we drew names. And I think that was another feature that was something new for us to do this year.
That was
year.
A great idea.
Yeah.
It really was.
Yeah. It was Eric's idea, I understand, and
really?
David Veald and I just ran with it. So that was really smart. Should we do this again next year? I think we would do that again for sure.
We pumped the hell out of it on this show, so...
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
for what,
a
couple months?
Right.
Yeah. So we were, we pushed it here. Every place we could, we pushed it, so.
Now, you know, I didn't have anything to sell.
Right.
Because that's not what I do there, but I got a lot of hugs.
Oh, well, that's almost worth it, isn't it?
Well, I got a half dozen from me, at least. You know.
We saw so many people that we know. It was so wonderful, you know, from all of our years there with concerts and book events and art events. Yeah. And it just seemed like every time I turned around, there was somebody wanting to come in and catch up with us and give a hug. So thank you to all the people that came and said hello to us and gave us a hug.
Hey, Bobby Jean, you know, the standees that you had hanging on the I had a lot of people ask about those, too. So
did you?
Yeah, next time if you do it next year, maybe bring some of those and you'll probably sell some.
There you go. Mm-hmm. Well,
Roy Rogers and
Bobby Jean.
Yes.
Bob Burrell.
Mm-hmm.
We have in City Artist Studio tonight, we have a gentleman that is a great writer. This is his second career?
Yes, absolutely.
Second career, and he is a San Francisco native and now transplanted to Henderson, Nevada. He obtained a bachelor's and a master's from San Jose State University and managed a business in Silicon Valley. His passions beyond his family are writing, reading, and maintaining an avid interest in American political scene, which is heir apparent in this book.
I guess so.
From Mr. Barry Soloway, we have a book named Who is Killing the Liberals? Would you please welcome to the Writer's Block, Mr. Barry Soloway. Hey, thanks for making the trip out here.
Pleased to be here.
Yeah, we love having people in this studio. It's always more fun, you know, because
you
don't have to wonder when they're going to stop talking.
Yeah, no. I know originally I was told you could either do it remotely.
You
or
could.
Here.
You didn't want to drive.
We wanted to do it here.
Well, yeah, 3.5 hours. I mean, you know, it's a pretty good gig for 3.5 hours.
Besides, it gets you out of Henderson, Nevada, right?
It's true.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And it's starting to get warm there, huh?
Well, not too bad yet.
Yeah.
But it'll be there.
My stepson is a detective sergeant with Metro.
Okay.
And,
Really?
Yeah. And he's not big on heat, so. He lives in air conditioning. So anyway, that's my Las Vegas story. So I'm not going any further.
Okay, well, good.
So who is killing the liberals? It's it's a title and a half, I tell you.
It grabs people different ways.
It's kind of like real timely as far as the word goes. Give us a synopsis of your book, Barry, if you wouldn't mind.
Well, it's a politically based thriller. It starts with a series of murders, and the protagonist is sort of caught up in it. He's sort of like, he's not a superhero or anything like that. He's sort of like every man. And when he gets caught up and he has to try to figure out who's doing it to save himself.
Well, there's a list.
Yeah.
And he finds out that he actually is on the list.
Yes.
Well, you picked the perfect day to be here with the Mueller report coming out today.
Good title for that.
Good timing. Yeah. That it's intriguing, he's got a brand new FBI agent that's assigned to kind of watch over him, Carmen.
Right,
and she's kind of cool.
And she becomes the romantic.
Yeah, she's of course she's kind of figured as soon as you meet her she's going to be the romantic interest. But he's got an assassin after him, and
eventually
that's towards the end of the book.
Yeah, it starts out without giving the plot away. That
we don't want to do that.
The protagonist has written a book where he's outlined people he thinks are detrimental to the American culture. And people start getting murdered in the same sequence they appear in his book.
Right.
And as a result, all of a sudden, he's under suspicion by the FBI, and Carmen gets assigned surveillance duties there. And anyway, he has to try to figure out who's doing it to get out from under.
Yeah, and it goes deeply into the American government.
Yes.
Yeah. So
it's interesting. I noticed you start the book out as a radio talk show host, which is something I have some experience
with. Right.
And
don't we all?
I didn't know you before. It wasn't personal.
Yeah, no, that's okay. And you didn't know I was a liberal, so that's okay. But you started out there, and I'm kind of wondering why you started there and you didn't pick some other profession, some other media profession or something to start out.
Well, it's not any particular reason. I was just trying to figure out a group of people who would be on the list, and given the nature of the book that had been written. And we have the talk show jock type, and then we have the political activist type, and we have the hedge fund type, and so on. But there wasn't a particular reason for the sequence. It just sort of how it came about.
Now, the talk show guy was Bernie.
Yes.
Yeah.
Bernie Freeberg, right?
Yeah. Now I'm going to ask, because I was told to ask, was there a particular reason you picked that name?
No.
Okay.
No.
Well, he's the first guy that appears in the book.
I know, the first guy dead is...
Bernie Sanders is right there.
Well, it's the first guy dead is a liberal talk show Jewish host. And it just goes downhill from there.
What I found interesting as a reader, and then also knowing that we would be chatting with you, is that as the potential victims go along, without doing spoiler alerts, we get more of their story. So we start with Bernie, this talk show, and we get his story pretty quick. And then we get the next one, and you give us a little bit more about her background and so forth, you know. But it's like as we go through the chapters, you're also taking us, we're beginning to feel that each one, the next one is more connected or wealthier or has more influence, and we get more information. And I wondered about that as a writer. Did you purposely do that, or did you, as you were writing, it just sort of flowed that way? You had more to write about.
Well, I'd like to say it's because in the book that these people had been featured by the protagonist, he went from the least guilty to the more guilty.
Right, yeah.
So to that degree, there's some logic to it. But in reality, it pretty much just flowed that way.
Mm-hmm. It made sense.
Yeah.
I mean, if I was going to do a book of that ilk, that's the way I would do it. I would start from the bottom and work my way up until finally you get to the big guy.
Well, and the other thing is, of course, as people become potential targets,
mm-hmm.
because they're the next one and
sure.
the next chapter in the book, there's more goes on,
right?
Because there are people trying to protect them,
right.
and things like that. They're using their victimization as a sense of publicity,
right.
and all types of reasons why you sort of expand each character,
right.
as you go along.
And it gets and you can tell it gets frustrating for them because they just can't stop the killing,
right?
You know, and it just seems like, wow, you know, are they ever going to stop this? And then of course Jonathan gets involved,
right? That's correct.
Yeah, and then it gets a little intriguing.
Yeah, and the assassin's very good.
Yes, the assassin is extremely good.
And you know, you kind of like him. I think
you kind of do, don't you?
Yeah, you kind of do. I think that's partly why I enjoyed this book so much. A couple of the people that don't make it out, I didn't care for. Frankly, it was okay that they got it, but I liked all the characters that you really, you know. His pals that are helping him, and they, what do they call themselves? The Pacific Avenue Irregulars.
Yeah, Pacific Avenue Irregulars, yeah.
Yeah, and Carmen, and I even really like the assassin and the gal that's with him. You liked them. I mean, it's obvious that you like these characters, yes?
Yes. You know, I try to flesh them out a little bit as people so that the reader gets a sense of them more than just a cosmetic, you know, here's the bad guy who shoots people.
Mm-hmm.
But it was funny, yes. I sort of enjoyed the assassins.
Okay, now, this is a question I'm going to ask you. I don't ask many writers this, but Bob and I both write bad guys. We're okay. pretty good at writing bad guys. You wrote a pretty good bad guy. Oh, you really can't really tag him as a bad guy. He's just a guy with an off job.
Yeah, he's paid.
Alternative.
Yeah, alternative. Yeah, alternative employment.
Sort of a Barry type of character. You know.
I find when I write a bad guy, I really get into him and I really like him.
Yeah.
And they're so much fun to write. Did you find that with your guy?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, I really did. And I'm not going to go into the story of what happens.
Sure.
But he's one of the characters I most enjoy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I find that as well. And you know, even if I kill him off at the end, you know, I feel sad because I always kind of like the guy.
Well, I have to ask you, you know, it's who's killing the liberals? Did you think maybe, was there a battle between your wits when you decided to sit down and write this, that maybe it could have been who's killing the conservatives?
Yeah, I wondered that.
I'd have a little bit of a hard time doing that one.
Oh.
I think I'm on the other side of the fence than you are. Actually, it was a question of whether that we should use that title.
Uh-huh. Really?
And like the gal that did the editing, she was thinking I should change that. And there's obvious reasons. I mean, it turned a lot of people off that might otherwise have bought the book. But it just seemed catchier than other alternatives that we had.
Yeah, yeah.
And you grew up in San Francisco, but I think before we went on the air, you grew up in San Francisco, remembering it as a conservative city rather than
a
liberal city.
Yeah, yeah. I'm an old guy, by the way.
Okay.
So
no, that's so old.
I was born and raised in the city, and didn't leave it until after college, and I stayed in the Bay Area even then, in Napa and Marin County and so on, Los Gatos, and. It was conservative. Elmer Robinson was one mayor, another one, George Christopher. They were conservative guys. They were mayors. And I believe the city as an attitude or atmosphere changed at the Vietnam War. I think it became a very focal point, and it was also what the love power and all that stuff mm-hmm. was going on then. And it didn't ever turn back. It stayed in the liberal camp, and it obviously is very liberal now. And I don't see it changing in my lifetime.
Well, the entire culture of San Francisco changed.
Yes, that's correct. Yeah. That's absolutely correct.
And it brought with it the liberals and the left-wingers and
which
the hippies, fine. I suppose, would be the Haight-Ashbury. And
boy, you just dated yourself, Jimbo.
Hey, I'll be honest. I graduated from high school in 1967.
Well, you were in Vietnam, so I mean, that was your era, too, as well as mine. So
I was there.
Yeah.
I launched a couple bullets.
Yeah. I was lucky enough not to have to go to there.
I'm sorry.
I was in the Army, but I didn't get sent.
You missed
anywhere.
A great trip.
Yeah, my number came up 345, and they only took like 75 that year. So
I got drafted before the lottery.
Oh, really?
And then when the lottery came about, I got drafted again. I was still in the Army.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah.
They really liked you.
Yeah, apparently. Well, my draft board really liked me. That's because
I have a question.
No. Go ahead, Bobby.
You got to give me some chocolate before you ask.
Take a bite, drink wine, and ask.
You're the assassin that we've been chatting about just a little bit. He's very versatile. He has lots of different talents. Did you have to research, in order to write the different things that he does and the way he studies his victim and all? What kind of research did you have to do so a reader like Jim would know that you had things correctly?
No, well, not me.
I really didn't have to do much research. I mean, for one thing, I do hunt, and so I know how to use pistols and rifles and things like that. The other one, I read avidly, and so particularly fiction, sort of the murder mystery type, the Sanfords and the mm-hmm. Silvas and whoever. And so you get quite a bit of knowledge just mm-hmm. from reading other people's work.
Mm-hmm.
And so, no, I really didn't have to do any research. And on physical locations, I pretty much stayed in places I knew or had mm-hmm. been to, at least had been to.
Mm-hmm.
So not too much research involved.
I thought it was interesting that you're on a golf course and you decide to have him in a boat,
Yeah, yeah.
It's just I liked that we were entertained with different
different scenarios, yes.
Different scenarios.
I tried to make it a little interesting. I have played that course once in a sort of bucket list episode. But, you try to make it not too cut and dry. Mm-hmm. You might try to bring in, because I think in the real world, not everything happens the way you think it's going to happen.
No.
So if you're an assassin, you may have a game plan, and maybe it isn't going to pan out for you, at least at that time.
Right. Well, assassins don't murder people. They assassinate people.
That's correct.
Yeah. And there's a big difference, mm-hmm. And to learn the difference, read the definition.
Read the book.
Read the book. Mm-hmm. So anyway, it's an intriguing story. It's, of course, who's killing the liberals. Now, you've also got this into a screenplay.
Yes. It's been created a screenplay earlier this year.
Uh-huh.
It's been pitched around the studios and production houses. And so far, we haven't had any luck.
No.
It hasn't scored. They're trying.
Well, probably now is not the time to try to sell it either.
No, you're probably right.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it's still actively being looked at.
Yeah.
But I don't know if it's going to happen or not.
Did you hire a screenwriter that's produced some stuff? Or
yes, I had. Yes. And he's also the one that's pitching it.
Yeah. Gotcha. Yeah. Those guys aren't cheap.
No, unfortunately. I got sort of a, Costco pricing on it.
Costco pricing.
No, it wasn't. It's not cheap.
Yeah, no, it's not cheap. And I have a friend of mine who keeps saying, why don't you write a screenplay? For one thing, I don't write screenplays. And for another thing, I can't afford to hire somebody going to write a screenplay. I keep trying to talk Eric into it, and he won't do it.
No. It's not easy. Writing a screenplay is. When I first wrote my first one, I was talking to an agent who we didn't see eye to eye on a lot of things. But he said, authors can't be screenwriters and screenwriters can't be authors. Well, I do both, and it is quite a different tack because, in a book you're describing everything and in a screenplay you're showing everything.
Right.
Less words. And that's a struggle for all screenwriters. I mean, that is a big
struggle. By saying that you do both, your foot is dangling right over the top of that bucket.
Yeah, I know.
And you know what's in the bucket.
Yeah.
Okay.
I just started two more. I was on a pilot.
Bobby Jean Bell?
Yes.
Have you another question for Mr. Soloway?
Okay. I have another question. One of the things that I also enjoyed is that you give us a little glimpse into the life of an author, since your main character is that. And, you have some comments about his literary agent. And then, of course, initially the book doesn't really sell. And then as things happen, the book, I wondered, Jim Christina with a publishing company, this would be the kind of book that maybe you wouldn't look at and then you'd wish that you had.
More than likely.
And I just thought that was kind of fun because you also give us a little glimpse into the world that you are in as an author.
Well, I've certainly had my share of rejection notices, so yes, that's true. Obviously, what I would be writing is fiction and the character is writing nonfiction, but in this case. But yeah, it I could identify with the author.
Oh, I think we all can.
Yeah.
It's.
When you started sending out those first query letters, what were your thoughts, and then how did that change as you got the rejections and then finally, scored?
Well, I didn't really score. I self-published. So
independently published.
Yes, that's true.
We don't use self-published.
We actually created our own little publishing
company. Yeah, that's the way to do it, too.
But, it's not a thrilling situation when you get the mail and there's nothing good in it.
Right.
I tried I tried to line up a literary agent who would then represent me to major publishers and so on. And nobody wanted to touch it.
Right.
And so that it sat around for quite a while, and finally, I was pushed along by my wife, Linda, who encouraged me. Said it's really a good book. We should do something with it. We ran into a fellow who we ended up working with to help promote it and polish it up a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And and so there we are, But, it wasn't it's a depressing thing for a new author, frankly, to try to get into conventional. And if you're a big name, if you're a political figure
or
something
like that. Well, that's the whole deal.
But if you're not that type of person, if you're just Joe Schmo has his first book out, it's tough. It's tough.
Right.
And usually the standard answer is no.
Right.
Because you're an unknown. And even if you have a good piece of work. It's tough.
Yeah, and they don't write you the checks anymore. I mean, if you happen to get a publisher that will take your work without charging you for it, you don't get. I mean, there's no advance payments.
No,
you get royalties. Period. And that's right. If you don't sell any books, you don't make any money.
And they don't even set up the book signings.
They don't set up anything. It's all shameless self promotion. They don't do anything for you anymore.
Absolutely correct. I bet a woman who's published several books, it lives in Henderson, and what she's made a pretty good deal going to book clubs.
That's not Katie Salidas, is it?
No.
She also lives in Henderson.
Yeah.
And she's a good author.
Yeah. But I mean, you do it any way you can. in such as being here, is being, you know, hopefully helpful.
Right. Well, I mean, you've got a lot, big audience here.
Yeah. That's true.
We don't pat ourselves in the back, but we have a pretty good audience.
Jim would hurt himself.
I can't do that.
Yeah. Well, you have a bigger, bigger audience than the Copper Cat News bookstore.
Well, yeah, probably. Probably. But you know, it's getting into, like, agents and stuff. We most of the writers we talked to don't have one anymore. Pretty much everybody's given them up. And I think the day of the literary agent has kind of gone by the wayside, kind of like steam locomotives.
Right.
It's because they really, I mean, a good publicist will do more for you than any agent will. Mm-hmm. You know, they get you to places where an agent won't put you.
Right.
And good publicist, well, Bob and I have the same one, but they'll get you on interviews that are hour long and TV shows, and, you know, and if they're good, they don't you know, charge you an arm and a leg.
Yeah. No, for an unknown author, you have to do something like that.
I mean, I always tell people the standard is send out 1,000 query letters. You maybe get 3 responses, and 2 of them are going to say no.
And the third one is going to say, let me think on it, and then you get a no.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It is difficult.
Yeah, it is.
You know.
Well, they have, I mean, writers now, there is so many.
Right.
And most, every writer I've talked to have gone to doing their own publishing company, buying their own ISBNs, and doing their own work. And you get the gratification with that is you don't have somebody looking over your shoulder and changing your work.
Correct.
You know, I mean, you can hire an editor and they may blue pencil something or red pencil something, and you read it back and you go, no, I'm not cutting that. You know?
Actually, I have a very good editor.
Yeah. Well, I do too. Yeah. My wife. So.
Well, mine I have to pay.
Yeah. Well, I'm supposed to pay mine, but I don't. But, you know, I mean, she's gotten the blue pencil, red pencil down to a, you know, she knows where to insert and cross out. And,
yeah.
But
my biggest problem in all of that is still there, there, there.
Well,
T-H-E-I-R, T-H-E-R-E.
Yeah.
I may go through 10 edits of my own, and I still won't. Catch.
Well, that's one thing we tell writers. We say, what's the biggest advice you have for a new writer? And about half the writers that come in here and sit down and talk to us, they say the same thing. Mm-hmm. Don't self-edit your books.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think it's okay to do in the beginning.
You're writing it, fine. Fix it before you send it to the editor.
Yeah, I read mine a couple times before I send it to the editor.
I always do.
And I mean, not just to catch typos.
Yeah.
Try to figure out, did I really want to word it this way and things like that. But I'll give you an example in Who's Killing the Liberals. The editor caught an item. There's a character that comes along in the book, and he's a potential suspect. Mm-hmm. And you never know at the end. In my book, where I finished writing it, she came back to me, and the editor came back to me and said, well, what happened to this guy? Mm-hmm. You know, you didn't tell the reader whatever happened. And you go, yeah, you're right. So it's another paragraph, right?
Yeah.
But things like that,
yeah.
You know, that you just don't see.
Well, if you're making a mistake and you don't catch it,
right?
You know, if you edit your own book, you're not going to catch it again.
Right. You read it so many times.
Exactly.
Especially, you know, and I find out that I can edit it 10 times on my computer. And as soon as I print it out on hard copy, I sit there in the easy chair or whatever, and man, I'm finding mistakes left and right, especially in my books, you know?
Yeah, I do the same thing. And I go back in my old work. And look at it. You go, I can't believe I did that.
But that's because you like to take a holiday every.
But no, but you see, that's the beauty of it. If you independently publish, especially if you have your own company, you can go back and do it again.
Yeah.
Resubmit takes you one day and you're done. You know, and it works. You can fix errors.
Yes.
If Doubleday publishes your book and they get a typo in there, you're stuck with it.
Oh, yeah.
And I see typos in all the big publishers' books.
I do, too.
All the time.
Yeah. Not a huge amount, but
no.
Almost every book will be one or two.
And it's usually the same words.
they've all cut back on editors and readers and even on, what's the word I'm thinking of, fact checkers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and fact checkers today, I mean, fiction, of course, but, well, to a degree. But, you know, in fact checkers today, because most of the books that get written that are really big are true stories, you know, whether it's Fear or some of the others that are out there right now and that are coming out, are books that have to be fact checked.
Yep. Bobby, you ready?
Yes.
Are you ready? You sure?
Well, I wanted to be sure that we were talking about the same thing.
No, we are talking about the same thing. And go, 3, 2, 1.
When you open your closet door, do you say, I need something new? Or, I think it's time to retire some of these boring shirts? Or, if only I had. What would you like to see when you open that door? Boots, hats, cool shirts, boho tops? Out West Shop will revive your wardrobe with new fresh looks for men and women, all with great style in comfortable fabrics and for every occasion. Shop www.outwestshop.com, enter coupon code SPRING, and save $10 on your order. Call toll-free 1-877-340-9378 for personal attention. Out West delivers style door-to-door, coast-to-coast, and around the world. And remember, it's always a great day out West.
You're leaving on vacation. Tickets have been purchased. Hotel reservations are confirmed. Mail delivery has been suspended, but what about the dog? Well, all dogs rule day camp and sleepovers. It's the place your dog wants to be when they can't be with you. All Dogs Rule provides your best four-legged buddy a place to run and play outside among orange trees and grass in a country setting. Your dog gets to be, well, your dog gets to be a dog. All Dogs Rule offers additional services including individualized playtime, personal walks, swimming, sessions in the creek, and training if added. Visit All Dogs Rule on the web at alldogsrule.com or give them a call at 805-524-1100. And when your pup returns home with that smile on his face, it'll leave you wondering, whose vacation was better, yours or the dog's? And Bob?
Woof.
Actually, my dog is going there Monday.
No way, really?
Wait, she's going to be there until Thursday. Uh-huh. We have interior painters, and you can't have your dog.
Oh, yeah.
They're trying to paint, and their dog's all over them. Yeah. A golden retriever. Well, you know, what are you going to do?
Especially with a golden retriever tail.
We have a chocolate lab downstairs in our car.
Oh, you do, really?
Yeah.
Should I run around? I think Ronan probably would have crapped his pants. But anyway, it is now 7:32. We are in the studio live with Barry Soloway and, of course, Bobby B. Gene Bell and Bob Brill. It is, if you want to call and talk to Barry, the number here in the studio is 818-602-4929. Again, that number is 818-602-4929. As we were talking a little bit earlier, Barry, you said you have another book out. It's The American Dream.
Yes, that's correct.
Brief synopsis, please.
It's also political.
Okay.
And primarily takes place in D.C.
Okay.
And without giving the plot away again, it's about a vice president. The president is looking for a vice president running mate. Mm. And the hero gets the nod. And then things happen after that, where he's not really who he's supposed to be.
Ah, okay.
So I get the feeling that you like politics, obviously.
Political intrigue.
Yes. Have you thought, is it in your future plans to write a non-fiction political novel? Not a novel, but book.
I think I'd bore everybody to death if I did that.
Yeah, why?
I don't know. I mean, I can use it in my stories, mm-hmm. and enjoy doing that. I don't think I could do it and make it interesting enough, frankly.
I don't think if you're not a talking head at MSNBC, you're not going to make it.
Right. I don't think I'd work out. I won't be a Walmart greeter either.
Oh, my God. There you go.
Please, no.
Bobby, would you like to ask the question?
I would love to ask the question.
Okay.
Barry, do you believe in such a thing as writer's block? If you do, what do you do to get around it? And if you don't, why do you think writers get it?
Well, I think everybody gets stuck at some point when they're writing a story. They're not. You may have an idea where you want the story to go over in an overall sense, but you get to a point where you're going, geez, I just don't want to know what I'm going to have next. And I think everybody gets that. And I think, you know, sometimes stepping away from it, taking a little break might help. But I've had it. Yeah, sure. And but usually, eventually, I start thinking about the story. I think about the plot. And, okay, if something will come to me as an idea of what to do next. So that's really the only suggestion I would make.
Okay, that's reasonable. Before the show, Bobby, we were talking about the writer's block question. I told him what John Sanford's answer was.
I was going to ask because he talks about liking to read right. John. So
he brings in a guy with a gun.
So when you take your twists and turns in a story like this, do you vary as far as the depth of your direction? In other words, if you're going down the path, does it ever kind of go in your mind, okay, I'm going to go really far out, or you try to rein it in?
I try to create interesting twists, not overdoing it. I think sometimes some writers put too many in and it gets a little dumb. But to make it interesting, and I think in reality, that's how life works. Not everything goes from A to B to C.
No.
Sometimes you get on the wrong track and you have the wrong thought process of, you know, who did what, and then you have to ultimately bring it back, of course. But I think it also makes the books more interesting to have that. But no, as far as going, I don't know how I'd describe whether you're going way out or not. I think there are a couple in Who's Killing the Liberals where they think they know who did it and doesn't necessarily mean that's the person that did it.
Yeah.
But you have to do that and make it interesting.
Yeah. You always know who did it in my book. You kind of always do. I mean, well, you kind of have to.
Oh, yeah. I'd like a Jefferson's chance.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you had two choices. Stinky and Sandy or
Comanche. And you knew them
Comanche
right up front.
or Comanches. You know, that was. In fact, I'm going to send you that book. I'm going to send you that one and Jonah Blue when I get home.
I enjoyed reading it.
Oh, I hope so. Everyone knows it so far, so you'd be the first one that didn't like it. But Jefferson,
I have another question.
Please do.
Barry, we love to know what our guests are reading. Do you read electronically, or do you have a stack of books next to the bed or your favorite place you like to sit? What are you reading?
Well, first, I do read. I have a Kindle, and my wife and I travel a bit, and it's just a whole lot easier than having a separate suitcase full of books. And once you get in the habit, that's sort of easier. I read popular fiction. I'll read... Sanford will be an example. Mm-hmm. We read even Woods, Stuart Woods, even though I don't think his plots are all that great.
But, yeah.
But, Daniel Silva.
Patterson?
Yes, Patterson. We'll read Patterson. I like some better than the others. You know, I think I like the ones that he writes versus the ones
not the ones he writes with.
You know, maybe he gives an outline and says, go for it. Patterson. I mean, if it's on the bestseller list and it's the style of book I like, which is, thriller, murder, whatever, I'll read it. You know, if I think it's a quality author, sure, I'm going to read it. Scott Pratt is another one that's not as popular that I think is great and read his stuff.
Yeah, we've had some really good writers on this show, too. Mm-hmm. We actually asked a lot of the writers this question, and the question is that Bob and I are both, as they said, we write Westerns. Mm-hmm. But we both love writing dialogue.
Yeah.
And dialogue absolutely makes your book. And you are good at dialogue, I have to say.
You are,
I really enjoy it.
Yeah, you can tell.
But there's two reasons. One is, it goes real fast.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you could almost, it's almost like you're talking yourself.
Exactly.
You know, and so you try to keep it real. You know, what would, if I said this to you, what would probably be your reply?
Right.
And it's just fun. And it also fleshes out the character quite a bit.
It does. And do you read your dialogue back to yourself after you write it to make sure that it flows?
Well, not right away. When I go back to edit my own stuff, then I will. Then I'll go back and consider how I wanted it to go.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes I'll make some changes.
Yeah.
Usually minor, but yeah.
You have something to say, Linda? I can turn your microphone on anytime, you know.
Okay. Now, you said this is your second career. What was your first career?
Well, I was a business guy. Uh-huh. I have a bachelor's and MBA, and I went into business, and I worked in the Bay Area for several corporations. I ended up running one that dealt with high techs. we were a manufacturing business, so we weren't really a tech firm. Mm-hmm. But we, our biggest client was Cisco Systems.
Gotcha.
And as they got big, we got big. And so, you know, it was a pretty good gig. And I enjoyed it. And then, but I did retire a little early. They had a change in ownership of the corporation. Frankly, they didn't like me much. I didn't care for them much. And so we parted ways at a certain point.
And is there anything that you pull out of that first career that you use in your writing?
No.
Nothing
really.
At all? No, I mean, the dialogue, it, well, anything? You know,
no, I
mean,
not really. I mean, if I was writing a couple of these writers that do the finance type deals, then maybe I could get into that. But no, not really.
So it was like, okay, I'm done with that life, and I'm on to over the new life.
Pretty much, yes.
Oh, that's me,
that's
too.
Correct.
That's great.
I was a general manager and vice president general manager of a corporation. And when I left, I left.
All you corporate guys.
When you had your career though, were you writing? You know, were you?
That's a good question.
Did you not start
you write while you were still working?
You know where I'm asking.
Yeah.
In the beginning, of course, I read. I've always been reading a lot, but I think I started writing a little bit right towards the end, perhaps. But mostly, it's after I retired.
Okay.
And of course, you have a lot of more of time when you're not working.
Sure. Now, I'm looking at Bob, and I just had a brain fart.
Thank you.
What advice would you give to a new writer that's going to be writing his first or second novel?
Well, first I'd say probably what you start writing is not going to be very good.
Yep.
Because it's like anything else. You get better the more you do it.
Sure.
And you get more polished. You get a better sense of whether what you're writing is really good stuff or not good stuff. I wrote some trash in the beginning that I knew wasn't worthwhile. And you have to have that sense of sort of a quality control interest on your own writing. So don't expect to sit down for your first try and knock out War and Peace. It's just not going to happen.
Well, sure. Yeah, you're not going to wow them the first book.
No, but you will get better if you keep at it. And so I'd suggest just persevere. If your first book doesn't go anywhere, do anything, get the second
book just
going.
Stick to it.
Yeah, try to write something you might know a little about.
Right.
Like whether it's your geography or your storyline or whatever.
Mm-hmm. I mean, tend to put some history.
Yeah.
We put a lot of history in my books. And
that's cool.
Historical stuff and places specifically. There's a lot of places in Arizona and New Mexico that people don't know about.
Yeah. And characters, too.
And characters, too.
I like to throw in a few... real life guys that are legendary, because basically you could make up stuff about those guys because they made it all up themselves anyway. The dime novels told the whole story.
Most of them were all lies.
Yeah, exactly. So you lie a little about them.
And if you're reading, you like to read fiction, nonfiction,
a little nonfiction, mostly fiction.
Mm-hmm. Are you an outliner or a pantser?
An outliner.
You outline your stories, or you do it seat of pants?
Seat of pants. I mean, I'll have a story in my mind that I know where it's going to go, basically.
Right.
But when I first started writing, I did an outline.
Yeah.
And I found I wasn't following it anyway, and it didn't make a whole lot of sense for me. So I just stopped doing that.
Okay.
And now I just sort of... And one of the things I look at, because my book is very short chapters.
Yes.
And one of the things I look at, it's almost like a play.
Mm-hmm.
And you do scenes, and what do you want the next scene to be?
Right.
And that's, for chapter changes.
Right.
So it's just how you visualize, but I don't. I don't outline.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't either. Bob, you don't either.
I do.
You do?
Yeah, I do a basic outline. I mean, I don't go detailed outline. I have the tendency to write down scenes and as separately and then incorporate them in where I want to incorporate them in. Because I usually, to be honest with you, start... anything I write, whether it's a screenplay or a pilot or a book, with some scene that came up, and then I just develop a story around it. Just driving down the street, something came up to mind or something like that.
Mm-hmm. So. Do you ever, when you have a really cool scene, jump into your head?
Yeah.
Do you write it down and save it until it's a good place to punch it into the story?
No, not really. No? The one thing I've done, I'll start with a book and then stop it. And try doing something different.
Mm-hmm.
And I might go back to that book and utilize a scene or two or characters that I had previously thought they were good, but the book wasn't starting mm-hmm. out to go where I wanted it to go. And so I might use that in a sense. So I'm sort of going back and retrieving things.
Where do you write, and how often do you write when you're writing?
Well, I try to write almost every day. Not quite. You know, we get diverted on doing things. But I tend to write in the afternoons for 2 to 3 hours. Mm-hmm. That's sort of my pattern. Mm-hmm. Mornings, or we do other exercise, do other things, you know. But that's sort of where we go.
Do you have your private place, your office?
What I have an office. Yeah. Well, it's a converted bedroom. Right? Yeah, yes, well, it's an office.
Do you have a word count in your brain every day that you try to
achieve? No, I don't do that.
I don't either.
You know, I look at the bottom of my word program to see, oh, well, I got that many words.
Yeah.
But I don't have a goal.
Yeah, I don't either. I think it locks you in, and then you just get lost.
Well, and also you might write some gibberish because you just want to fill space.
Fill a space, yeah.
Yeah, I kind of write till the dog comes up and says, I got to go out.
I got a pee-pee, Daddy.
We've got a dog bed in my office. We're okay.
Yeah. Yeah, well, mine's right behind my chair, and it's like, Casey, I'll roll over him. But I mean, you know.
I have one last question.
Please do.
Barry, what does literary success look like to you?
Well, I mean, I think there's two elements. One is you want to be acknowledged, is that what you're doing is good. I mean, that's part of it. And the other one, hopefully you make some money. So, I mean, I'd like both, really.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks.
You actually can make money if you independently publish. I will be the first to admit that.
Cool. Well, I have hopes. I mean, I have some sales, but they're not where I want them to be yet.
Just keep pushing the book. Keep pushing the book.
Do you do a lot of social media on your own?
I do Zippo. I'm too old for that stuff.
Linda, do the social media for him.
You got to do it, man.
Offers page.
I've been told that.
And just start putting it on friends. As you add it, you're adding friends, and they're getting all the information. You don't have to do it. Let her do it.
She's my technical editor anyway. Every time the computer screws up, I call her and things like that. You know.
I don't do social media myself.
I have. Let's see. I have one, two, three. I have three. Well, I have my personal, and then I have my publishing page, and then I have, I guess that's, and then the writer's block page. And everything I do goes on all three. And so I get a lot of comments and stuff. I say, oh, I see you're redoing the cover. Yeah, I just did it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think I've got a total of 5 Facebook pages, 2 Twitter accounts.
Oh, I couldn't have. I can't juggle 5.
And, a couple of them are. Kind of I don't use for, and they end up going on the other ones anyway.
I know.
If you do it,
so
I and then of course I write the blogs I write, so I push on those, because I write a blog, and one of my books is the push for the blog, so I can put that on Facebook author groups,
mm-hmm.
and I can put the blog out there with my picture on the book at the top,
right.
And I'm pushing a book, and they can't complain. Right. When you're writing a blog, you're pushing a book.
Your libraries around Henderson, don't they do book signings and have authors in for talks and stuff?
No, we did one book signing at a bookstore in Henderson. But Linda's tried to line up some bookstore signings. Still working on that. And we've been to book fairs and things like
sure.
that. But the library... I shouldn't say that. We haven't actually pitched that.
They'll do it. If you have to go and talk to the library, the head librarian, they usually have a room where they do that sort of thing.
Well, I'll give it a shot.
And I've done some at the L.A. County Libraries and L.A. City Libraries.
Yeah.
Or they
could have something that highlights local
authors. Oh, local, yeah.
And then the topic isn't as... critical. It's just these are local, supporting local authors.
Yeah. No, we'll give it a go.
Yeah. And they you never know. They might just put your book in there, too.
Could be.
Mm-hmm. I tried that at Simi Valley, and they told me that, it's a private library. It's privately owned, so they have to put it through the board.
Oh, wow. That's different.
That's what I said. Yeah. Well, I actually didn't say that. I said something else. But anyway... Well, anyway, thank you so much. You made it all the way out here from Henderson to come visit us at this little lowly radio station, and it's really cool.
We've enjoyed the
It's cool having you, and thank you so much. And Bobby Jean, if you have any parting words for Barry?
Just keep writing.
Keep writing, for sure.
Well, I appreciate it. I'm working on a sequel to Who's Killing the Liberals.
For sure.
I can't wait.
And it's not Who's Killing the Conservatives.
No.
Now, is your...
You gotta
is,
be, You got to be true to yourself.
Is your email address FCC Global? Is that the one that you use mostly? Yeah, okay, it's Barry Sol or B Soloway, Sollowaye 7866 at sbcglobal.net. The books are The American Dream and Who's Killing the Liberals, both available on Amazon.
Yes.
And online booksellers, I'm going to guess.
Yes, it's in print or
okay.
Electronic.
Perfect. Thank you so much for joining us. It's been a hoot having you.
Yeah. Thanks for having me.
Oh, it's our pleasure. You know, give us a holler. We just might want to have you back. You never know. What do we got? Next week we have, next week is a Russ Atherton night.
That's right. I won't be here.
Jack Hirsch, and he'll be in studio as well, and it's called Death March Escape. He got escaped from two death marches from the Nazis in World War II.
Really?
Yeah. So it should be a pretty interesting story. And after that, I don't know. I don't know who's on. I don't know.
Can I tell you?
I don't know. I got nothing.
I'll be here.
Yeah. you'll be here the week after.
Yeah.
But next week, you can this is Russ Atherton.
That's right. Russ. Yeah. Russ
then I get to find out how my dog behaved.
I'm glad I won't be here, okay?
My fourth Thursday of the month co-host is a guy who owns All Dogs Rule.
Okay.
So
okay.
That's where my doggie is going Monday, my golden retriever, Bella. He's actually a dog trainer, and she went through all of his classes.
How old is she?
7. She's gorgeous. I'll show you a picture.
Our guy's getting a little old now.
He's
11 and a half.
Yeah, I had a Roddy that was that old, and I finally had to put
Zach is going on 14.
He's a little dog.
Yeah, he thinks he's a puppy.
He's a little dog. Okay, for LA Talk Radio, the Writer's Block, Bobby Jean Bell, Bob Brill, and myself, Jim Christina, we are out of here.